going.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Go ahead, John.
Okay. So should I start from the beginning or just where we are? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So in the very first paragraph in there, we got rid of the retroactive part of it and tried to put some language in that basically says what we actually do without using the word retroactive. The others...
The word or the meaning of retroactive, right?
Yeah, right. So
okay.
Right. And so then we also imported in some of the language from UCF's key goals, because really that's what a lot of these reflect, and so it's a good idea to have sort of your incentive programs be consistent with your awards, so you're driving the train in the same direction, right? So we imported some of that. Actually, I think off maybe the president's website or one of the websites. So that's what a lot of the additions are.
Okay.
And so we need to take a look at that and say, okay, does that really capture what we want effectively? So then on eligibility on the top of page 2, and this was developed with a lot of input from both the union council, but then also lots of other faculty members chiming in at different points. So we thought the way to go is to just make everybody eligible. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is that it incentivizes everybody. So if you want everybody working towards a common goal, why would you necessarily exclude someone? Now, they may be excluded in reality because of the nature of their position, right? So there's some folks who don't do research, and that's part of their position. Well, they'll know not to apply for RIAs. But on the other hand, we have some folks who their primary assignment isn't teaching, but they still do a lot of research. So why would you exclude those folks? You know, if they can do great research, they should be rewarded for that and encouraged to do it, because it furthers the goal of the institution and the department and everything. The other thing that does is it, for things like TIP, our understanding is about 80% of the folks already are eligible.
Yeah.
So you're only talking about that 20%. And that other 20%, some of them do things like they supervise students on internships. So that doesn't apparently count towards their SCH hours. But it's still getting students out into the field and presumably getting them access to jobs, opening doors for them. You know, it's important work that could be recognized as well. The RIA Award, actually the way it's constructed, is for tenured and tenure track faculty only. And so that excludes a whole bunch of different people. And we couldn't really see the rationale for that, other than just directing the rewards to one specific group. So that's what we're thinking about for eligibility. It keeps it simple, it incentivizes everybody, and it reduces some of these little quirks that exclude some people that probably shouldn't be excluded. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then for the applications, this is where we'd really like to streamline the process, and especially the TIP applications they're onerous for the candidates to put together. They're really tough for the committees to deal with, because you might have 30 or 40 of these big 2-inch binders. And that, from the feedback I've gotten, they take more time to assemble for the faculty member than their promotion and tenure files.
Yeah.
So that makes no sense. And I know from my own case, I spent a week on mine, and that seems to be true across campus. And that's a huge investment institutionally that we really probably shouldn't be making if we can avoid it. So we thought for all the awards, what you really need are these elements. You need to have some sort of a cover page to establish who it is. What award they're going for, a table of contents so that the committee members can see what's in there, make sure it's there, an abstract of 500 words or so that basically is their opening statement about why they should be considered, letters of nomination, which could include self-nominations, and then the relevant portion of their AESPs, right? The chair's evaluation.
Oh,
yeah,
oh,
chair's.
Okay.
Evaluation. Sorry, yeah. Let me put my glasses on. The chair's evaluation. So that folks know what the department chair is summarizing about their annual contributions. And then any sort of other evidence of outstanding contributions within that award program. So for RIAs, that could be a list of the publications, patents. For TIP, it could be grades, SPIs. So basically, you know, everybody who's applying for these awards, they're academics. They know how to communicate what mm-hmm. they do. Just let them do it however they want to do it, whatever they think is the best, the most effective way of making their case.
Yep.
But keep it all in a binder that's, we say, a 1-inch diameter binder. And then finally, their CV at the back so that folks can see their trajectory. The one other thing in the eligibility part that I skipped over is the other idea we had is that instead of making the binders only pertain to that 5-year window, mm-hmm. let it pertain to the entire time since they either became eligible or got their last award. Mm-hmm. So it could be as little as 5 years, but it could be more. Mm-hmm. And part of the rationale is that especially for research things, a lot of times the importance of a publication isn't recognized right away. It takes a while, and then all of a sudden folks realize, oh yeah, that thing that we thought mm-hmm. was kind of a minor contribution actually turns out to be important. And it also rewards folks who are really consistently doing well. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine you might have someone who, maybe they have one PhD student a year who's finishing. And in 5 years, that's 5 students. Yeah, that's good, but it might not be good enough for a TIP. But if that's over 15 years or 20 years, now you're talking that's a substantial contribution to their discipline. And maybe now they would be competitive with folks, you know, have more in a shorter time, but they're getting the award over a longer interval. So it's just giving a little bit more recognition to folks who are consistently doing really, really well and building up that consistency over time. So that's kind of a new idea. And it also helps, you know, for folks who have odd situations, you know, where they have a whole bunch of papers 1 year and then 6 years later they got a whole bunch, so that 5-year interval doesn't look great, but that 6-year interval looks really great. You know, papers in Nature 6 years apart, that could be pretty good. But if you got one within 5 years, is that enough, you know? So anyway, that's an idea that we thought might be really useful and, again, incentivize people. So then the selection, we thought that the process should basically go the way it's been going, but to make it a little bit more straightforward, we actually got a recommendation to use the system that the Fulbright Evaluation Committee uses, which is that, you know, the binders are available to the college committees. They go through the binders, and then what they do is they put together a ranking of everybody that they think deserves the award, from one is the top person, and whatever number they decide to stop at, that's the lowest person. And then they give that to the committee chair, who compiles it, and they produce two things. They show what all the scores are, mm-hmm. they show what the average score is, and then they show the variance, how much variation is there in the scores. And with that, does what the Fulbright Committee does with that is they spend most of their time talking about the folks who have the most variation, because that means you've got faculty disagreeing on the strength of the candidate. Some are ranking them really high, some are ranking them really low. Why is there that discrepancy? You know, the folks who there's a narrow window, well, you just look at what their average is. Maybe it's a narrow window and they're really high, those are the obvious winners. Maybe it's narrow window and really low, those are folks who are going to be towards the bottom of the list. And the ones in the middle are the ones, you know, that are hard ones. So then the discussion can just proceed the way the discussion normally goes. And then the committee votes again, but now for real. And so now you then get the rankings of folks and you compare to the number of awards you've got to give out. Mm-hmm. And then you see how those match up. And then that gets communicated up to the dean and ultimately to the president. But regardless,
of an applicant's score, they've got to get a majority of the committee members who are voting to agree that they're worthy of the award.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't take just one or two or three people ranking them number one and everybody else has them unranked. That's not enough to do it. They've got to get a majority.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what other things? Oh, okay, and this one's really important. One of the things, and this comes basically from how the National Science Foundation and others work, is committee members, because there may be conflicts of interest, shouldn't be voting on folks within their own department. So if you're on a panel at NSF, you don't vote on anything that's coming out of your own department, or even your own university, usually. You're still there to address questions. So if there's a question about, is this journal prestigious or not, or something like that, you can still provide that information, but you're not actually voting on people within your department. And since the number of votes doesn't really matter, you can do that pretty easily. And we had a lot of faculty, especially from outside, saying that that had been a problem on committees in the past, and that they were concerned about that. So that's a pretty simple change. I mean, I was kind of shocked when I got here, actually, and was on my first committee, and I just thought, because of everywhere I've ever been, that you don't vote on people in your own departments. Mm-hmm. Folks say, oh, yeah.
Well, and like, I think whoa. There's a difference with something like the NSF panel that you mentioned, because there may be representatives there that are looking at proposals that have been submitted from their own institution, and some people are not. So they're in a different position. But what I read here is we want to get a representative from each department, so it's fair. I mean, it's level. You sort of anticipate somebody's going to vote for somebody in their own department. They don't.
That's what we get is then you're into these personality situations, and that's where we've heard things from faculty members where they're not convinced that their own departmental members are voting fairly. And so that's part of it, is it totally removes that aspect of it. And it also removes the representative from the department from the uncomfortable position of, having voted for someone in their own department or not. Now they know that, their conscience is clean. They don't actually have a vote. All they're doing is providing the information. Yeah, we did that. We suggested that in here just to make it easier. Well,
but it wouldn't
figure it out usually. it's an idea. So
sure.
We need to make sure that this is operational, that it's functional, that it's going to progress smoothly. We think folks will buy into that idea, but we want to hear your perspective as well.
Mm-hmm.
So then, the process is if there are more awards available within a college or unit than you have candidates, right, then you've got these extra awards. And so then the problem is, what do you do with the extra awards? And so what we're suggesting is if that happens, then those awards just basically go back up to the university level, and then the committee chairs, bring forward their one person or whoever's next on the list who didn't get it, and it basically gets recycled within the university at large for that award. So like if COS has, two spare tips, then it goes to the university wide, and if CAH and some others, are short some, then they look at their people and decide who to allocate them to. It's kind of similar to before where we had alternates, and the alternates, one from each unit, would go to the larger university-wide one. Now it's basically only using that procedure if you need to. And the rationale for that is, another option is to kick it down the road, right? Mm-hmm. But then if you've got folks who are on the committee, they might be tempted to kick it down the road for next year when they're eligible, so trying to avoid that sort of thing. And then, just because it could happen, if you have surplus awards still existing somehow, just divvy up their value and give them to the folks who won the awards. So if you've got one surplus award and somehow everybody else is covered by some miracle, then they get the $5,000 divided by the number of people. And
it's a creative solution.
What's that?
I said that's a creative solution.
Well, and then the other thing is that that award is fractional, right? So to simplify bookkeeping, you just don't recycle the fractional awards, just because otherwise you're going to have this person when they retire has a tenth of an award or a 1/20th of an award, and that's just, it's not worth the paperwork, right? So anyway, that's
John,
what we...
John, I'm sorry. You're saying do it one time though, right? Not give someone a raise of $5,040 for life.
Yeah, just...
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just...
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that the dollar award of the dollar value still goes forward.
Okay.
The way it normally would if a person were associated with it.
All right.
Go ahead. The other issue that has been raised is the fact that these things do exist in physical binders. And, you know, especially their availability for people who are on TIP committee. I'm just, John was telling a story earlier downstairs. I'm thinking about this week, if I had to go to assess TIP committee binders, there's 2 hours between 9 and 5 that I'm available. I have university obligations Monday, Tuesday, most of Wednesday, all day Thursday, and most of Friday. So there's not, the accessibility is not really there, and it also feels like it could be streamlined, that we could help and facilitate streamlining through an electronic system for these folders.
Especially if we can reduce the volume of especially the tips from a 2-inch binder that oftentimes has got, you know, every teaching evaluation that they've had in that 5-year window. And, you know, some folks are teaching 4 different courses a semester. Yeah, so that number, I mean, they're 2-inch binders, right? But when you're actually measuring the thickness of the paper, they're 3 or 4 inches thick.
Yeah.
You know, those binders are bursting.
It also eliminate nuanced discrepancies about people exceeding margin and too many words in an abstract and so forth and so on that would disqualify a lot of applicants.
Yeah, so we put that in there too, that, and that's language from Sigma's Eyes grant competition. So they actually do theirs online, and they suggest a word limit, but they're not going to count the words. They just say, here's the word limit. If you go beyond that, the committee may frown on it. And so, you know, for minor things, like we've had folks who have, because it says copies of your department chair's evaluations, they literally go to the copy machine and copy it, and they're trying to use another piece of paper to cover everything else, or they have a student do it. And a little bit of an O from outstanding that's in the research one when they're on the TIP award program, that they're getting bounced out and saying you've got an invalid folder for something like that. And that shouldn't be. So we're saying let's leave that up to the discretion of the committee. If it's annoying the committee, it probably wasn't a good decision on the part of the applicant, and the committee should be allowed to be annoyed, but not to just disqualify it because they're 2 words over, or a little bit of an O is showing by accident or something like that.
Well,
so these are just
thoughts. Thank you. Very
just trying to get
detailed
us talking
and
about
thoughtful suggestions.
But we're trying to please a really diverse audience.
I know.
And also a numerous audience. So with 1,500 and some people, we've heard from quite a few.
I bet.
And I'm sure that you know horror stories from your end as well.
Oh, yeah.
So if we can eliminate some of the causes of anxiety and tension and just obviously lost productivity.
Yeah.
You know, especially on the TIP side. The RIA is not so bad. I've never done a SOTL. So anybody here done a SOTL?
I've sat on a SOTL, but never tried.
Yeah,
it's
just like
TIP.
Yeah.
So it's as much work as a TIP.
I wouldn't say as much, but close.
Close. Yeah, so TIPs and SOTLs sound like they're the real troublesome ones in terms of how much time is getting invested on both ends.
Well, I guess we're going to hand out, we've got some ideas as well. And fortunately, some of these do actually overlap with yours. And one of which is that we are going to make this an electronic process.
Okay, very good.
So
we didn't put that in because we weren't sure how that was. You thought, at the end we'll mention that. But
yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. So.
Everyone has some.
Everyone down there? Okay. You want to go through?
Good.
You want
that's
me too?
Good.
Or how do you want to do this?
Well, you're probably going to be
better versed.
More articulate.
Okay. Well, we actually even started off with the salary just because we did have a conversation with the provost about that, and I think he wanted to do like, I know.
Hmm. Are you sure?
What? Well, this
is March.
Well, now wait a minute. This is not ironclad. This,
okay.
You notice this is proposal.
Okay,
it's not an article. So, but you know, he.
I'm just expressing surprise at the timing of it. Sure.
I know.
Just so we're clear.
But he you know was good on the you know doing the a little bit of the base salary for people that are on the low end of the scale and thought that he'd like to do 1.5 for the ATB and the merit, and at, depending on how the, you know, when we get all the data on who would need these extra awards, he might up that 0.20% a little bit to, but we have to see how the data goes on that. So we kind of went at this a little bit differently, but I think you'll see there's some large areas of overlap. So. On the tips and RIAs, we would, right now we fund 40 tips, 20 RIAs, and 10 SOTLs for a total of 70 new incentive awards, plus a variable number of recycles every year, which we never quite know what those are. We're proposing that we double the number of RIAs. But what we want, the way we want to fund that is we originally said we thought we would get rid of the recycles. That idea has now morphed. So we'll keep the recycles. The first 10 recycles every year will be what funds those extra RIAs, partly. Hmm. Okay?
Okay, explain that to me again. So, yeah.
So you're actually getting a total of 80 new awards.
Okay,
it's 10 recycles.
The recycles are just from all the existing awards combined? Or
I guess the thing is that they're not so focused on the funding part. We're letting you in to see how we would be funding the awards, I think is what she's saying.
Yeah,
okay.
just
80 total awards, I think.
Yeah. And then we looked at the award categories, and we had sort of the same idea you did, except you were using the some of the language from, I think, the
key goals.
The key goals, and I think we were looking at more. We might move to that, but you know, right now there's this big push to establish what do we call it, collective impact metrics.
Right.
And so we were kind of tying our award categories to those things because
okay.
That's kind of where we're going in the future.
It's
and
the same general idea.
Same general idea.
Goal, right.
Going,
it's
tying
a
it to a goal instead
metric
of yeah.
For the goal. Okay.
So
that's
we would out of from the remaining recycles, we would fund SOTLs. We're not putting them in a definitely, they would always get funded. And then we're looking at creating some other award categories that would be tied to those. SOTLs is tied to the collective impact metrics because one of them is improving student learning outcomes. You know.
Okay. Do you know what the others are just off the top of your head?
Well,
I haven't looked at
them in a while. Yeah, I mean, and as I said, this was kind of a, you know, brainstorming session with the provost and Cynthia Young. And some of them are things like improving graduate student research productivity. So we might have one category that would be, and what we're looking at is once we get these established, because I think they're still probably in the mix with the strategic planning and all that kind of stuff, that we would do these on these categories would be set for like 5 years, and then we would review them and see. But, you know, that's,
you know. That's an interesting idea as well.
Yeah.
So
things like
you're envisioning an adaptive dynamic.
An adaptive dynamic process.
Okay.
Yeah. Interdisciplinarity and partnerships. So that's similar to your idea of a partnership award, but you know, broadening it a little bit. Now the tips and RIAs would be awarded at the college level. These additional awards, other awards, what I'm calling a new category of awards, would be done at the university level.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and all this is just, as I said, we're just brainstorming too, but there could be other, you know, like people that supervise graduate student research. Could that would be one that would, you know, it would sort of, because that's what we're hoping to improve. External funding, and that would be tied not to, you know, okay, so you're be tied to discipline, not to a certain amount, but so, okay, you know, like somebody that's in Creole, a $50,000 grant or $100,000 or $500,000, I don't know what they get over there, big bucks.
Big grants, yeah.
You know, would be measured against people in Creole who are getting big grants, whereas in CA, a grant for a National Humanities Endowment for the Humanities Award for $5,000 might be a big grant for that college. So that for those, so that's how that would be measured. So I mean, and these aren't, as I said, these are just ideas, but that's kind of what we're looking at, is to tie these to those specific metrics, and then they would be sort of. Now, when we were looking at the criteria and the procedures, we thought, you know, we've said before we wanted to make these at the college level for the TIPS and RIAs, and we would give final approval for these to the deans, and a dean could determine that he didn't think that all of the candidates were worthy in a particular year. If he decides that, then the award that he decides isn't worthy has to be recycled to be used the next year. And the way that we got around the problem of, okay, somebody on a committee, is that if you are, you can't be on a committee if you are eligible this year or the following year. So it avoids the incentive saying, okay, well, maybe I'm not going to get it this year, but if I dump it off, next year it's my year, so I can get it. So
okay, so the same, you identified the same problem.
Same
had
problem.
A different mechanism for solving
it. Had different mechanism for solving it, yeah.
Got it.
And we also standardized and simplified the binder. Came up with pretty much a very similar approach. We didn't give a one-size binder, but we said a full CV, a one-page statement of the application strength, and an appendix of materials that support the cause, et cetera. And we actually were fine with doing, for each applicant, they shall include the past 5 academic years of evidence or more. It could be since the date of hire or the day of the last award in that category. So same basic idea,
right,
that you can do a longer horizon for some people. The only problem that we might have with that is typically evidence of some of these things are kept, records are kept in the college or department office, and our records retention, I think we're only required to keep things for 5 years. So we'd kind of be on faculty's, you know, if they want to do a longer period of time, they're going to have to keep their records up to date and make sure that that's available. So,
well, we can certainly help with that.
Yeah. I mean, these are
one of the things
that
we're trying to do.
We decided that, let's see, one of the other things was, we were going to develop a committee charging document that would remind committees that the only the application is to be discussed, and that the award is based on merit. No additional outside information or discussion of position, either e.g. instructor versus tenure track faculty member, past awards, current salaries, can be considered. Because we've heard the same kind of stories. People get in there and they say, well, you know, this person's been winning TIPS consistently. We should give somebody else a shot, you know, no matter how meritorious their thing is. Or, you know, he makes a boatload of money. He doesn't need a tip. Let's give it to this person who really could use a $5,000.
Different colleges seem to have different traditions with respect to this, so that standardized, and you're right, a charging document would be one way to do that.
Something like that. We also decided that we are not going to restrict eligibility for RIAs any longer, which is sort of what you were going on to just tenured or tenure-earning faculty, because a lot of our, you know, we've got lecturers or PhDs who do significant research. I don't know, maybe even some of our instructors do. They tend to have an awfully heavy teaching load, but they might. So we would probably use the tenure and tenure-earning faculty as the base to determine for the, you know, the percentage that goes to each college, but we wouldn't limit the ability to win one to just those people. Okay. Something that might be a little bit more controversial, and again, these are just ideas, is that we would like to kind of spread out the number of awards awarded each year so that you wouldn't be able, you would pick what you think is your strongest category for the year, so that we wouldn't have some of these triple crown winners, as we call them. But because you are operating on, if you picked a tip this year, then you could be eligible for a RIA next year, right, or a SOTL the following year, or whatever. So it doesn't decrease your ability to win all three, but it says, you know, we think it's more fair to kind of even it out so that you don't get one person taking the whole bunch out of a department.
And the other thing that would do is it would make the playing field a little more fair, too, because some folks are on sabbaticals or other leaves. Now they have time to put together all these files, and someone who's in the middle of their academic year, they're sometimes lucky to do one, and sometimes we have faculty members who just can't even find the time to do that. You know, a lot of folks, you ask them, you know, you'd win a tip. Why don't you ever apply to tip? Like, I don't have time.
Yeah.
And so that would help a little bit with that situation. And putting it online and reducing it and streamlining it.
Yeah, that's something that Faculty Excellence is currently working on. And I think they're hoping to get that up by next year. But you know, that's something I don't have. The one question I had about yours, where you said that everybody would be eligible to apply for all the awards, you are removing that SCH requirement, or
right.
not?
Right. No, removing it because 80% of the folks qualify.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it's a shifting baseline, and so over time, I know from my own teaching in biology that, for example, when I took over teaching vertebrate zoology, even though the room held 24, the person who taught the course for years only had 15 enrolled because that's how many could fit in a van. So when I got there, I knew, said, wait, you know, UCF stands for you can't finish at the time, right?
Yeah.
So we've got 9 seats empty and these kids can't finish, fill the 9 seats, we'll take 2 vans.
Yeah.
And then because of the way I do my research, you know, for me to go out in the field and put out traps and game cameras and stuff, you know, that's a day for me to do that for a day of the students getting the experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of 1-to-1. It's like, why not offer 2 lab sections? Now it's 2 groups of students benefit for 1 day of expenditure for me. That's a better dynamic.
Yeah.
So now there's 48 students in that class where there used to be 15. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's just been true through time. The number of faculty hasn't risen as the number of students hasn't kept pace. So everybody, we're already have one of the highest student to faculty ratios in the country. So everybody compared to nationwide, we're way, even within the state, where it's us and USF are the two who are way out to the right.
I have to be just bluntly honest with you, no matter what our team thinks about this or may or may not agree with, that's something that is a real, probably a deal killer for the president. He just, because his whole thing was, we've got to show that we're getting our senior faculty into the classroom to teach, you know, that's a big deal for him. So, you know, we can, I'm not saying we won't take it back and ask and explain what your rationale is, but that will probably be the hardest sell.
Well, there's actually 2 rationales. That's the first one. But the second one is, one of the things that goes on here is that in order to become eligible for the awards, folks know they have to teach larger classes, right? And that was part of the initial incentive how long ago?
I know.
Does anybody know when the TIP RIA?
About 20 years, I think.
20 years, that long. Okay. I knew it was well before my time, so okay, that makes sense.
I think it was in the blue book, right?
No.
It pre-existed.
The RIA was
the devolution.
The RIA was, but I don't know that TIP was,
Yeah, so.
Everybody had TIPs at one point in time.
Oh, did they?
And they all, everyone did away with them, except for here.
Yeah, UCF's the only one that's retained it, right?
Yeah.
Well, so what's happened is that, so that was the original incentive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now what's happened is folks realize that they have to have so many CHEs to be, or SCHs, my acronyms, SCHs. to be eligible. So then folks who might be more desirable in another role get put into a role of, say, teaching an intro course or a large, let's just say, large enrollment course, even though they might not be the best person to do that, solely for the purpose of becoming eligible for tips. Mm-hmm. So that would be like a baseball manager taking the leadoff man and batting him in the fourth position, because the leadoff man needs to get so many at-bats to be eligible for the RBI title. I mean, you would never do that.
I don't know. Maybe they would.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Okay.
And so one of the things you're seeing is you're not getting the perfect net match or the best match between your people and their talents and their talents, right? What they're good at doing at a particular time in their career. There's getting to be a mismatch because folks are deliberately being moved in solely to be eligible for the tips.
John, when you say that, I'm curious, when you make all faculty available, do you have a plan for, like, our dentist, for the people who work in the creative school, for those people? Because how are you going to compare them?
Well, that's why we want the candidates to make their own cases. Right. So there may be teaching roles that we're not even aware of that they're doing, like I wouldn't personally be aware of, and as a member of the committee, until I see what they're doing, I might not even recognize that they really have a teaching role. So I think it's more about the person putting together the coherent argument for how it meets the metrics or the goals, whatever we decide the goals, standards mm-hmm. need to be. But to try to not arbitrarily exclude people, so they may be excluded by the nature of their positions that they just don't
not
do
everybody
that. Not everybody's doing all these things. Right.
So I guess right now, maybe I'm wrong, but aren't tips done by college, like a certain amount are allotted to each year?
Right, by college.
I've been out of it for a while, so now we're adding SDES, we're adding international.
No, I don't think that's the intent.
Because they would have faculty within those areas because SDES has. People, and they're the program advisors, things like that that fall under the category 40 A&P people.
Right,
are
right.
Still requiring them for a substantial commitment to teaching that is didn't spell out that or
well, do you feel that the librarians have a substantial commitment to teaching? Because they think they do, for sure.
Well, that's where we would say put the case before the committee.
So the librarians would also be added.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that you're adding a bunch of different colleges.
Right. No, it's adding more people in who might have really disparate roles,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they're ones that, you know, those of us in kind of the core academic disciplines aren't even aware they're doing.
Where would they apply through? What college would they apply through?
Well, we have another pool, right, for folks who aren't within a college.
Research centers and institutes?
Yeah.
Just for the readers.
I'm not, it's been a long time since I've had to administer the program, maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
We'd have to look at that language and figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
That was also part of what the Service and Partnership Award
that
we floated was about, was for folks who have those sort of positions, that they might be well suited for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now it may be that...
It may fall into one of our categories
that
as
maybe,
well.
You're thinking something similar. Maybe we need to think explicitly about those groups.
Although
when you think faculty, you're like, oh yeah, and it makes perfect sense. And then you start, what if you're CNG?
Well,
right,
CNG.
And that's what we need to think about is CNG folks.
CNG are always going to be dependent. They could win one, but they're still dependent upon whether the grant will sustain it. But, I don't know. I mean, we may be able to tweak this in some way that we could get it. You know, make it acceptable to the president. I'm just telling you that out of all the things in your proposal, that's the one I think will be the hardest sell. But there's a lot of good in there.
Mm-hmm. I
really do compliment you on being so detailed and coming up with so much
good
stuff.
We're pleased to see that you've got some creative ideas and this is our first opportunity to really reform this system. And it sounds like 20 years and Lord knows the faculty has been screaming
for
it for a while.
We've been living with this language of... What is it? Something about according to existing criteria and procedures for
2004.
Yeah, yeah. It's the last time we touched it. So
yeah,
it's time to make a change. So
I'm glad that we're in such good agreement on so many different points.
I think it makes for a good starting point for doing some real creative brainstorming among ourselves.
Could you talk a little bit more about HITS desire to see more senior professors in the classroom?
Well, that was part of the initial impetus, was that, you know, in a lot of places, you go to someplace like University of Florida, if you are a freshman or a sophomore, you may not even see a full professor until you get into your major courses, you know, until you're well up in your junior year, you know. And so his whole philosophy was, no, we need to expose people from the beginning to some of our best faculty. And, you know, so we don't want all of our, you know, initial or early, those first couple of year students to be taught by not, I don't mean to knock them, but just instructors and lecturers and TAs,
right,
because that's what happens at a lot of major universities. So,
but if they're working on grants, they take themselves out of the classroom, the professors.
Some of them do, but I mean that, but you know, there's...
That takes them out of the TIP thing.
Yeah, that takes them out of TIP,
yeah.
Period, yeah. So,
well, and it would, even under the system we envisioned, they wouldn't have, unless they could compensate in the minds of the committee by having a large number of graduate
right.
students and being really successful, or even under your system, was,
yeah.
It looks like that's one of the collective mm-hmm. impact metrics.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They might. So we're thinking more about maybe the output end, as opposed
yeah,
to the input end.
Yeah.
And so that's also the concern with the external funding, is that's the input, not the output. The output
yeah.
is the papers, the students, and things like that. And,
right.
And even within colleges, like COS is a great example. You know, the hard sciences and biology have much more opportunities for big awards
oh, sure.
than say, political science or communication.
Yeah.
So,
well, as I said, I'm not sure these are going to be the categories, but that's, yeah.
Yeah. So we have some concerns on that end.
Yeah. One other concern I had that maybe you can address, you had a good idea about improving graduate student research productivity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned whether or not there's overlap between that and ARIA. For example, if a faculty member collaborates with a student to publish whatever, and then they also apply for ARIA to get credit for that publication, I could see this as double dipping, if you will.
There may be a little bit of that, and we'd have to define these fairly narrowly, but there's some double, I think some
they're
overlap.
Overlapping, if you will. Yeah.
In some of our categories now, you know, TIP and SOTL sometimes
right,
overlap.
Right.
So
right.
I'm not sure we can work really hard together to try to, you know, make definitions that don't, but I'm not sure you're ever going to be able to avoid all overlap in these categories, because so much of what faculty do is integrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their work just, that's just how it works.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah. So.
Yes, integration is a good thing.
Well, unless you're Donald Trump. I didn't say that. And I certainly didn't say that on tape. Yes, he is here on Saturday, and I'm sure.
Here on campus.
Yes, he's
oh,
here on campus.
You can get free tickets.
Yes.
You can have mine.
I want to see what kind of wall he's going to build. As my colleague said,
it's a beautiful wall.
Well, some of you
and
know Pedro Quintana Sensio, yeah. right? From mm-hmm. he's Mexican. He said, well, the Mexican side of the wall, it's just more room for murals.
Yeah.
The Mexican side,
yeah.
we know, is going to be beautiful because they'll have these great big murals
yes.
stretching for 1,000 miles.
Yes.
So I don't know what it'll be on the U.S. side.
With a little pile of tiny skeletons in front of it. Yeah, that's nice.
They had that clip of Vicente Fox. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Saying we're not going to build the, he says
yeah.
the word, wall. Donald Trump says, it just got 10 feet
yeah.
higher.
I just what?
Got 10
just
feet
just
higher.
And it's going to have a large, beautiful door.
Ornate.
Ornate. We do know that. Okay.
Okay. So,
do we want to caucus and kind of talk about
yeah,
these things?
Yeah, because we have
yeah,
a bunch of
idea,
our
yep.
folks here.
Sure.
And see what,
okay.
What
good.
Good.
Good. And
good.
While you're in your caucus, the minutes we overlook.
Oh, yes, the minutes.
Okay. Well,
they
arrived. They've confirmed that.
Big word.
I tied him to the wrong pigeon.
I wasn't here, so I can't say anything. You were here.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Like
tell my story some other time.
After we get off the
yeah,
tape.
After we get off the tape. Okay. Okay, so here's
yeah.
something that did come up on our side. So we had been thinking about making the incentive awards open to everybody,
mm-hmm.
in part to accommodate folks who we might not think are doing, say, research or teaching mm-hmm. in the traditional sense, but they really are, and to incentivize everybody. But then the question Charlie asked more directly about the librarians and stuff got us thinking, well, you know, the other option is to have awards specialized for other groups.
Yeah, which...
Because we were thinking, well, maybe we're still, by opening it up, still not incentivizing.
Yeah, but at some point you get to the place where you're just giving everybody an award just for the sake of giving them an award. So we talked about that at our caucus, too,
okay.
and I think mm-hmm. we ought to really restrict these. These were originally faculty awards, and that's probably what they should stay.
Also, this is a big bite to take.
Yeah, I know.
In this round. So it would be really great to concentrate on getting tips or results in a place where we can all agree on. That would be, really, well, and whatever that
yeah.
we have on the table before we start taking bigger bites of things that aren't on the table yet.
Because we would really, I think both sides would really want to study that and think about, you know, the different groups and what it would require and what kind of awards you want to do and how to structure them. And I'm not sure we want to take that on this round.
If you can imagine how many months that could have the potential to add to our bargaining.
But we don't want that.
No, we don't really want that.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that was the first thought we had. Is there anything additional that we really had a question about, or other than how do we proceed forward from? Because we have a lot of elements of
I think probably the way forward is you talk to your people. We'll go back and work with the provost and Cynthia and see what you know
mm-hmm.
how we can sort of. You know, maybe firm up our proposal a little bit more about what categories we're looking at, and then come back
and go over where we're apart.
Yeah, and talk to them about you know.
So
okay.
both come with a proposal
yeah.
for just this section,
yeah.
this next time, and then just compare the points and see how they.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
See
do you want to work off of ours initially?
That's fine.
Just
you're going to send it to me anyway. So.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah.
We
okay.
can do that.
Thank
and
you,
there's
you
a lot of underlines, so.
Well, because it's a lot of new material, so
exactly.
that's
yeah.
the only reason why.
Exactly.
Yeah,
just
no,
but I will
fine.
Have a copy of it, so. If she
and
okay.
we can, and you know, who knows about the salary? We just, but because we've got to see what the legislature. I mean, we know, barring some miracle, that the days of state appropriated raises are probably behind us. At least during
the
current administration. But we, you know, we still have performance funding that we hope that we will get, and maybe even some emerging preeminent money, who knows, you know. So, but the good news is the legislature's coming out with their budget, what, 2 months sooner this year than last year,
yeah.
so that gives us
If it's on time, it'll be March 12th.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, of course, then the governor has to decide if
yeah.
he wants to, what he wants
yeah,
to do about it. But hopefully, it won't impact us too much in terms of if he decides to veto portions of it, it won't be stuff that impacts us.
By March 12th or April?
March.
March 12th. Wow,
yeah, they're wrapping up.
Yeah, that's really soon.
Yeah.
They're hoping to be on time, too.
Oh.
Wow.
They're on schedule to be on time.
I think probably after last year, they were not wanting a repeat of
yeah.
the agonies they went through. That was pretty painful
well,
for everybody.
You know, I don't know what I don't know what the rationale was to start early this year. I think it's because everybody's district is redrawn, so
oh.
they wanted that to settle down out there. People are going into new constituencies and stuff like that. I think
that could be.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And then they're going to want maximum amount of time to campaign.
Well, and people are having to move to new districts, and people are having to
introduce themselves to new.
And I don't think they've settled it yet, but there's one plan out there that says every senator has to run because they redrew those districts so extremely.
Wow.
Really?
That they can't just have senators come back from a district. They kind of changed all of them. So they would be coming back from a district that they, and the senators don't want that.
Oh, no.
Of course not.
I imagine why.
Well, actually, if I were a senator, I probably wouldn't want to either.
Well, the money, first of all.
Yeah, it's just expensive to run a campaign and the time.
It's disruptive, too, yeah, for them.
Yeah.
Sure. You're not doing any business while you're campaigning.
Yeah. I don't know what, it's up to the court.
So our next meeting is after spring break, right?
Well, I hope so, since spring break is next
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the bottom of the mid, yeah.
Next week?
Our start's on the 7th.
The 23rd.
23rd?
23rd.
The 23rd. 23rd on our minutes.
Okay.
Okay, so all right. We'll be back on this one on the 23rd then?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Very good. Is it this room?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Sounds
same
good.
Same time, what I thought.
Yep. So just one other question.
Okay.
The April 20th bargaining session,
mm-hmm.
is there any chance of moving that one day before or later or somewhere else in the
I'd
week?
I'd look into that.
Sure.
Just the Water Management District is having a symposium on the Upper Basin, and they chose the 20th.
So do you want the day before, the day after, or the, maybe the week before or after? I can. Can you look on either Wednesday on either side?
I think
the 13th is the council meeting.
Yeah.
That's why I was asking if the previous or...
The 27th is...
Yeah, I can't do the Wednesday after. I could do the Wednesday before.
Okay, possibly Wednesday.
Yeah, I've got another meeting in South Florida on the 27th.
Well, shall we conclude the... Are we done so I can tell her to stop recording?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Cheryl, we're done.
Okay.
Thanks, Cheryl.